accession number 9227, reel 7.
Mr. Brown, reel 7. I think you were telling me about the Swiss representative, Zindel.
Yes. He, as I say, he came at Red Cross once. They allowed him through, and then they, Bonnet called out, "We are starving." And I think he did try to get some stuff in after that, but the amount of Red Cross parcels were minimum. One strange facet of the Japanese: they refused to allow us to sing "God Save the King," but they never stopped us singing "Land of Hope and Glory," which became the substitute for it. We used to sing that lustily whenever we had occasion to. But they would never allow us to say "God Save the King." That was forbidden.
Did they ever do any singing themselves?
No, not that I heard of, no. We had our own concerts and they used to come along to them, but never heard them sing themselves, no.
What happened to them after the surrender?
They, in fact, the there was tremendous confusion. The Chinese set upon them.
The Chinese civil population.
The Chinese civil population set upon the China Japanese, and in fact, there were cases of Japanese being thrown out of the top of trams. And it was got so bad that there weren't enough. The British commander hadn't got enough troops to take over the place, so he had to ask the Japanese to retain control. To avoid the whole populace getting completely out of hand. I mean, he only had, there was only an RAF regiment and Marines. That was all there was to control the place. And there would have been just a wholesale, riots and chaos. So he asked that the Japanese were made to retain control until such time as suitable forces would come. But as they became available, so the Japanese were put off into camps. And I always remember seeing a group of them being going down the main road in Kowloon with some British sailors mounted on little ponies, urging them along, making them run while they were riding them, and looking at them, saying, giving them some of their own back. when they could control the population, then there were enough population, then they rounded them up. I didn't see much of it because fairly shortly after the surrender, we were put on a boat called the Empress Australia and sent off from Hong Kong.
Where did you go?
Well, there again, this was a classic, really, because the ship I left England on was the Empress Australia, and she'd just come off the run, and she'd had swimming pools, gymnasia, A-class cabins, perfect units. And when I saw the Empress Australia, I thought, good heavens, don't say I'm going on that boat to go back. It was a very different ship. Everything had been gutted and bunks everywhere. And they tried to get as many people as they could on this boat. And so they got civilian families, women and children, and so on. And I found myself down on D-deck with hammocks. And the ship was filthy. She'd had an RAF regiment, and they'd been 7 weeks at sea. They were normally going to invasion of Japan. And they were bolshy, and the ship was in a frightful mess. So one of the first things I remember doing is really getting down to the latrines, which were in the middle of my deck, and cleaning them up. And I say it was awful because we had women, we had children, we had chaps and that, and none of us had any clothing at this time, except what we'd got. And they took us to Manila. And Manila was like an eye-opener. I mean, we're Rip Van Winkles. I mean, we were used to a .303 rifles and a thing called a Bren gun, and Sten guns were out of this world. And when we saw in Manila Bay the might of America's Navy, ships with bows that open, ducks we'd never seen before, I mean, we were transported into modern war all at once. And we were taken up to camps up in the country, up in the hills, which had been put up by the Americans and which had been staffed by Australians. And they were superb. Oh, they were lovely. And I regret my first night. We got into a jeep and we were taken up into these hills. And a voice said, well, you're just half an hour away from a square meal. But before we could eat, they insisted on fumigating us, squirting us with some stuff in case they thought we were ridden with lice or something, or bugs. And then we were given a terrific great meal, and then we were we found ourselves with camp beds, with sheets, white sheets. In fact, the first night I slept on the floor, I couldn't bear to dirty my sheets because we couldn't have a shower at that time. And the following morning, hot showers were superb. And then we got kitted out with various kind of equipment. They hadn't got a battle. We were given American kit. I hadn't got a battle. They hadn't got an Eisenhower jacket big enough for me, so I had to have just an extra blanket, they said. And we used to go down to Manila in jeeps, and there was only one building left standing, and that had been turned American Red Cross. You join a queue, and when you got to the head of the queue, you had donuts and coffee, and then you'd have those, and then you'd go back and join the queue again. After about 3 days, we were then asked to sign a statement that we wanted to go back to the UK by sea or by air, but the fastest, as fast as possible, on troop deck accommodation if necessary. Now, I thought, no, I'm happy here. My parents know I'm alive. I've nothing to rush back to England for. If it takes me 6 months, I'm not going back to England on troop deck accommodation. I'll stay until I get officer accommodation. So I refused to sign. I didn't sign. And a number of us didn't. Some who had families and wives thought, well, we can't stick hanging. I mean, they said, oh, you're going to be here for weeks and before we can get you away. So, other sign. Next day, they were back, and they were on the Empress of Australia. And they had a hell journey home, I heard afterwards. Dreadful journey. 2 days later, we were taken down and put onto an American trooper, a little boat, about 11,000 tons, with Americans going back to the States. And we went via Iniwetok, where the bombing, tests were carried out later on atomic bombs, all the way across the Pacific. On American trooper, with food out of this world. I've never seen. I mean, there was over a pound of meat per meal. It was ridiculous. I mean, we couldn't eat it. We used to miss midday meal, and hot and cold freshwater showers, which I'd never seen on a boat before. We used to eat in shifts, and there were nine of us sharing one cabin, and we went right across the Pacific in San Francisco. And San Francisco, they put us on Angel Island. And gave us some Canadian battle rest for warmth. And then they put us on an American troop train and sent us back right across the States on the Santa Fe line. And they gave us a Pullman observation car at the back. And that was a trip of a lifetime. We stopped at stations for meals. We were dropping off troops all the way across as they got to their hometowns. And the Americans, equivalent of Women's and Volunteer Associates, came out and met us all and gave us cookies and things and told us to hurry on home. New York, we got to. They put us up in an American camp at Fort Hamilton, and we had 10 hectic days of being taken up the tallest this, the longest this, the widest this, and everything else, with some Red Cross girls who were sent out to give us a lowdown on what conditions were like in England, advise us what to buy, hot water bottles, silk stockings, or nylons, and braces, anything elastic, because we were short. And then we found ourselves in the Queen Mary, which was then ferrying American troops back from Europe and travelling back virtually empty. And so we went back on the Queen Mary with about 200 people on board and eventually ended up in England. In fact, before, the people from the Empress of Australia got back on their dreadful journey all the way home.
Did you find that anyone suffered from eating too much, having been short of food for so long?
Yes. In fact, my tummy objected strongly and I told it to shut up. I had diarrhea and tummy ache for about 2 days, but I just said shut up and took it.
Were you given any sort?
And in fact, what we could get initially was entirely the kind of things we were having. It was rice, a lot more rice. We got meat in bigger quantities than we'd ever had. In other words, it was just more of what we'd been having, and we'd still retained our old habits. So if I couldn't eat it all, I put it by, obviously one kept what one couldn't eat, and one began to amass stores of rice, even though we knew there was plenty more to come. The habits died hard.
Did you get any sort of comprehensive medical examination before you set off on the journey home?
Yes, we did. In the Manila, I think we were examined. We were examined thoroughly there. And asked. In fact, we were asked to. The doctors in our camp had given kept medical records for us, and so we were asked to show the medical records. I'd had dysentery and I'd had malaria, And they thought I had amoebic dysentery, so they were all noted down and checked. Yes, we were.
Mm. I gather that some prisoners, when released from camp, were intimidated and frightened by their freedom, having been in a secluded community for so long.
Yes, there was. You couldn't settle. One didn't know what to do. Crossing a road was almost a fearsome thing, you know, one had to do this kind of thing. I found myself very jittery. And when I was in this camp in Manila, one of the things they were issuing out was tobacco and cigarettes and pipes and things like that. And I never smoked. And I think I got a feeling where I felt where perhaps I'd smoke. Because you couldn't settle, you couldn't sit, you couldn't read, you walk round. You know, it all seemed a strange world. Nothing was settled. And I remember going to the quartermaster and talking to him and saying, saying I want this. And I said, I think I'll have to start smoking. I remember he said, Buddy, said, I wouldn't if I were you, if you knew what the price of cigarettes were in your country. I'd forget it. And I didn't. I think, though, at that moment is the time when I could have taken up smoking in a big way because one was just jittery.
How long did that last?
Oh, not very long. I reckon a week, and I was settled again. No problem. Once before I went on the boat going back, I was all right. I regarded myself as normal.
What length of time did it take you to recover physically from having been in the camp?
No time at all. No time at all. I just put on weight. I was down to about 98 pounds, was I? I suppose yes. What's that? 14. 14 is 98. I suppose 8 stone, I suppose. A bit less than that, I suppose. Normally I was about 12. But one just didn't notice it. One just lost weight. And I know I took new clothes in with me. And after a year, I brought one of my old shirts out. Well, it was my tunic, in fact. It was a drill tunic. I couldn't believe it was my tunic. Because it just didn't fit. I mean, it just hung everywhere. One just got lost weight. One didn't realise it.
What sort of impression did England make on you when you finally got back?
Very run down, very grey. In fact, the day we arrived off the Queen Mary, I mean, we'd been living very well. I mean, we'd been on American Trooper, we'd come across the States where there was no shortage, we'd come on a Queen Mary where there was all the food in the world, and we got into this transit camp and arrived, and they proudly presented us 2 poached eggs on toast. As if it was, you know, I realised it was something, but I mean, to us it was, well, what's this? And it wasn't until I got home and I realised, you know, how bad things were in the way of food. And in general rundownness, you know, people were grey, people were depressed in some ways. You know, the war had ended, but, you know, it was still dragging on. It dragged on for a long time. It was depressing in many ways, particularly after coming across the States where things were so different.
How long were you in the English transit camp? Was that a...
Oh, that was only a night. And again, we had another medical check. And we were sent off home to a Grateful War Office. I reported at the War Office. And they, in my establishment in Northumberland House in those days. And they said, oh, yes, you're back. Oh, I suppose you want some leave. I said, yes, please. Will a fortnight do? I said, come off it. I've been away 4 years. You offer me a fortnight? Not on your life. Oh, they said, we're desperate to get people working. I said, well, I'm sorry. You know. I'll come back after Christmas. This was October. I found out afterwards they had permission to give me 3 months leave. So, anyway, I had my Christmas and I started work. And I couldn't get, by some freak, I had got out of the army system, so I wasn't entitled to a demob suit, and neither could I get hold of any coupons to get swimming and clothes. And so for my first months in the office, I went in battle dress, in uniform, so I hadn't anything else to go in.
Complete with your Hong Kong Defence Force badge.
That's right. Yes. So no, I was on the general list in it. Yes, on general list, major in the general list. So
you had the Cross and Blackwell.
That's right, yes. Yes, much the surprise of everybody in the office, but it's one of those strange things. It took me a month to get some clothing coupons, to get some clothes. I was told I'd get the black market. I said, no, I'm not going to the black market. You provide me with some coupons.
Do you think you learned any particularly important lessons from your experience in Hong Kong?
Yes, I learned that human nature can go to tremendous heights of goodness and can go to tremendous depths of badness. Men under pressure react in very different ways. Some are saints and some are devils. And it wasn't Japanese only, it was our own people, officers as well. Some you couldn't speak highly enough, others you just didn't want to know any more, hear about them. One also learned, too, that you had to survive, to learn to survive, that nothing was impossible. You eventually would have to evolve some way of getting over a problem. And even though you had very little, there were ways, there were means. And human ingenuity is quite fantastic. And I think it was the finest background for do-it-yourself training I've ever had.